You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Rhett back with you. Bucky is in transit. He's coming back from London after a pretty productive 2 weeks for him in London. Rhett, two W's for the Jags.
Yeah, we'll get to it. It's one of the games that I chose to kind of take a peek at here, Jags and Bills. It'll turn out, I think when we look back on this season, this will turn out to be one of the pivotal points of the year for the Jags to be able to kind of come together for 10 days in London and come out, go in two games under 500 and then to leave, you know, feeling pretty dang good about yourselves. Winning two games is a pretty big deal.
Yeah. And again, we'll get to that game and talk about where they stand inside the division and what that means for them going forward. But there's a lot of games we want to get to. We always try and pull out eight. So we've each got four of those and we'll tag on some of these other ones at the very end. But I think we got to start with where the week ended, at least when it comes to Sunday. That was an absolute beatdown. But I, you know, we talked about it last week where we kind of went through that exercise. Bucky and I went through that exercise of if you just took those two teams and said, okay, let's pick the players in an open draft between the Niners and the Cowboys. Eight of the 10 top players were Niners. So, you know, it was like we've built this up as this heavyweight matchup. And I'm like, nah, they're a little out of their class in that one just in terms of the sheer talent. And I thought that showed up.
Yeah. What was it, Micah and Zach Martin?
We had Micah. So there's a funny story about the Zach Martin thing. So it was Micah, and we ended up having CD. Yeah, so okay. I was talking, I was doing the post game last night, and our buddy Chris Wirtz, producer, is in there, and he's a big Cowboy fan. And I was telling him this, you know, the story about before the game started about how it looks kind of
real
lopsided
good started.
Yeah. On paper. And he's like, well, Zach Martin made it, right? And I'm like, you know what? He was right there. But at this point in time, we didn't have him. So I rattle off the names of the guys that made it from the Niners. And we had George Kittle. He's like, really? George Kittle over Zach Martin? Really?
Three touchdowns.
Really? So he leaves the room. He comes back right after the first touchdown scored. And he goes, "How? What happened? Who scored?" I go, well, it wasn't Zach Martin. and then Kittle goes on to score three. So, again, and that's eight of the top 10. And we didn't have Dre Greenlaw. We didn't have Ayuk, which you could make a case that they, you know, belong in that discussion. So even if you went beyond 10, I mean, say you go 15, it might be 11 to four, maybe, you know,
yeah.
12 to three, 11 to four. Yeah. Like it was lopsided. And I want to get to a couple things on the quarterbacks here. And let's start on the good side with Brock, because it has been, you know, it's been quite the, I think it's a fun debate that people have had. Where if you take Brock Purdy out of this element and put him somewhere else, does this all work? Is he a pure system quarterback? Does this, you know, is this more him? Is it more Shanahan? Is he just kind of a cog in this machine? And the way I've come down on it, especially after watching the tape, he's perfect for what they're doing. So let's just leave it at what it is. Like it's irrelevant. It's a barbershop conversation. Oh, if he would have gone here, if him and Dak switch places, those are all fine and dandy. He is perfect. Like, I don't know if there's a better player to operate what they're doing than he is. And when I watch the tape, like, okay, there are a lot of guys running free. There's guys running wide open, and he still puts it on the upfield shoulder so they can still run with it. He still gets the ball out on time. So he's taking the layups. In this game, there were three, maybe four in cuts where they're rushing three and four, dropping seven or eight. There is a lot of traffic in the middle of the field, and he still navigates the ball beautifully in there. So he made three or four graduate level throws that were, you know, the vast majority. Yeah, they're schemed up and they've got guys free and clear. But not only is hitting those, now you're starting to get the two, three, four, those pretty nice throws that you got to give him a lot of credit for.
I would agree with you. I think it's probably a disservice to what he's doing to kind of continue mentioning him as like, oh, the underdog that, you know, that did well. And, you know, I'm like, no, this is, we're talking about one of the best quarterbacks in the league here right now. And the way that he operates in this offense, I mean, that throw on the run to Kittle in the back of the end zone, like that's, I mean, you know, I know Kittle was fairly open there, but that's still a pretty big time throw on the move that way to be that accurate with it as he's kind of getting closer to the sideline. There was a number of them, as you mentioned. And I think we're talking about, you know, a guy who absolutely understands what is expected of him, what he needs to do down in, down out, and then with all the talent to execute it, like enough talent to execute it. Sure. Could he throw it a mile? Like, you know, like Josh Allen? Probably not. But does he need to? Probably not. So, I mean, like, it's just all the things in the talent and the skill set that he has fits perfectly, as you said. And I would say that he has elevated the offense probably more so than quarterbacks who have been with Kyle Shanahan in that offense since he's been in San Francisco. Right. I mean, like, so that tells you something about the skill set, because they've always had pretty good talent out there. And I think Purdy's taken it to a new level.
So there's, again, I'm not going to compare him to the greatest of all time here, because I know obviously where he's playing. Joe Montana gets a lot of mention just to how efficient and accurate they play similarly. But I was thinking about Tom Brady, and there's some similarities and some differences. Obviously, Brady's much bigger guy. But, you know, you have the late round picks, you have, you know, immediate success once you're thrust into the starting lineup. But I was thinking, remember with Brady, the conversation early in his career was, okay, the defense kind of carries him. You know, he's not making mistakes. It's just kind of how good is Tom Brady? And then, you know, as we know, once they put Randy Moss in there, and it was like, holy crap. Now you get to see him with all, you know, with all this talent, and it's historic in terms of how good he was. This is different than that. Brock Purdy's kind of entering into a team with a major talent advantage over everybody else. And I feel like where Brady got the stamp of approval, once we saw him with talent, we're like, holy crap, this is amazing. I think you're almost going to have to subtract some pieces from this 49er team before Brock Purdy will get the full endorsement of how good he is.
I guess you're right there, because you want to see him elevate talent that's perceived as less than than they would have had before, which, you know, I know you'll get to it here with the Patriots, but no elevating what they got going on right now as you bring the Tom Brady thing back together. And I don't know that anybody could.
Yeah.
You know, as you said on Game Day Final last night.
No, we'll get there. I want to get to the other side with the other quarterback here. We were talking about this a little bit before we came on. I have my buddy Bill Smith, who does a wonderful job with Next Gen, kind of running that whole program, which gives you all of the GPS stuff. And I said, okay, it's one thing to come on our pod and talk like we do and say, you know, gosh, I don't know, Dak looks like he's lost some twitch and he's lost some explosiveness. And there's, how do you, you know, in years past, how would you really quantify that? So, oh, he's not, his rushing yards aren't this, that, or the other. Well, those are opportunity based. That doesn't necessarily tell you about his skill set. But now that we have the GPS information, I think you can glean something from it. So I had Bill pull it, and I'll give you a couple numbers here just from when he entered the league in 2016. When he got his top speed in 2016 was 19.49 MPH. This year it's 17.24. Okay. Speed at the line of scrimmage, meaning, you know, what's the speed when you get to the line of scrimmage? That's more suddenness. That's more twitch based. Yep. His first year, 13.21. This year, 9.55. So that suddenness, that burst to be able to escape, get away, you know, make something happen. It's just not, it's not really, you know, where it was. The average speed from 11.41 down to 7.35. So again, you can make numbers say what you want them to say, but I think it's pretty consistent when you look at the numbers. And he's, as you would expect with the injuries that he's had and the lower leg injuries, that you're going to be sapped of some of that explosiveness. And I think that was, you know, that was some of what made him so dangerous, was because if you watch the Eagles play, we'll get to them in a little bit. You know, it's third and four. It's, dude, that's a nightmare when you got to deal with Jalen Hurts can take off and get you easy 6 yards anytime he wants. Dak was that guy. He's not really that guy right now.
And that's all GPS data from games, right?
Yes, yes, correct.
So I would be really curious to see what the practice stuff looks like too, and what it looked like in training camp, and whether it kind of mirrored that. You know, it could also be, you know, even lower based on, you know, how they actually, you know, how hard they're actually going in practice. But I think that is kind of telling. And but you know, it's kind of like a similar thing to what the Patriots are going through, in that, like, at least, you know, Dak's got CeeDee Lamb, who's an elite receiver in this league, right? But like, if CeeDee's not doing it, who do they rely on in the pass game?
Well, they don't even use Brandon Cooks. I mean, they don't throw the ball down the field. I mean, they really was like two shots that they took down the field. One was really late. So you're not beating, you know, look, the 49ers, if you think you're going to beat them 6 to 8 yards at a time, there's no chance. You got no chance.
Yeah. And then like there, you know, for the majority of this season, I felt like the Cowboys have been really committed to running the football, even when it wasn't necessarily, you know, you weren't necessarily getting 4 or 5 yards a pop. They were still sticking with it. And in this game,
they didn't even try it early. I mean, they just came out throwing.
Yeah. It was totally different. And then we saw the interceptions from Dak go way back up, you know, with three of them. So, you know, it felt like a little bit of diversion from the formula for the Cowboys. And obviously the formula is what wins week in and week out for the 49ers. You know, it's just
no question.
It's kind of funny to see that play out that way.
Fred Warner, I mean, that was he was a human highlight film in that game.
Warner,
I mean,
and Greenlaw.
It was outstanding. Last number on Dak is his rookie year, Rhett, 26 carries of over 15 miles per hour this year. He's got two. So he's on pace for 8 or 9.
Now, I wonder how much of that do you think is also just because that offensive line was in so much much better position when he came into the league, right? Yeah. With, you know, Tyron Smith's 5 years younger, whatever it is. It's six Zach years Martin. Younger.
You probably still had the center,
Frederick,
too.
Frederick. Lyle Collins in there, you know, playing good ball. And so, I don't know. I think that's part of it. And I think they're going to have to spend a ton more resources like to keep bolstering that offensive line as they go forward.
No doubt. All right. You mentioned it at the top here. The game in London, Buck was there. Jags, Bills, man, big win for the Jags.
Oh man, just huge. I mean, we talked about it last week. Like if we kind of, you know, we fast forwarded and the Jags find a way to beat the Bills again and talked about it at the top, like you look back on this as being a key point in the season. No question about it. And so for the Bills, came off a huge win right over the Dolphins, kind of settled down that explosive offense, and the Bills offense was rolling. Josh Allen is playing really good ball, taking care of the football. And you know, in this game, it felt like it was kind of snake bit from the start. You know, Matt Milano, who has arguably been their MVP on defense, right? Yeah. So far this season, is a really good off ball linebacker. He gets hurt and likely done for the year, seeing the way that he went out. Greg Rousseau was out of this game. Tre'Davious White, you know, already out for the season with the Achilles. Von Miller was just coming back. And so you're thinking, all right, well, shoot, the Bills need somebody to step up. And they did. I mean, A.J. Epenesa had the game of his life.
It was the Epenesa game. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. A couple of sacks. I mean, the strip, the recovery. I think that's going to actually be pretty exciting if he can continue that level of play when Von isn't
limited. He's always been in the leaders in get off, by the way. We preach get off on here. He's always way up there. How is he in that neighborhood?
He wasn't a finisher.
No, he can get off and go, though.
Yeah, exactly. And so you definitely saw that really put it all together. But I think what it comes down to, despite, you know, Epenesa trying to wreck the game for the Bills defense, is Doug Peterson, Press Taylor, Trevor Lawrence. I mean, you want to talk about a well-balanced offensive attack. 474 yards, and they kept the Bills guessing, it felt like. And when they needed to gash them, they were gashing them. ETN averaging 5 yards a pop on 26 carries. That's a ton of volume to stay up that high on yards per carry, including the 35-yard TD run at the end that basically iced it, although the Bills would get the ball back a couple of times, but that made it a two-score game with under 4 minutes to play. And then the Bills weren't able to get the onside kick. So, and then it comes down to this for Trevor Lawrence. So I think we kind of, you know, criticized a little bit that he was not playing up to his standard that he had set the year before, right? Had not been elevating in the progression that we kind of expected from him early in the year. He was at his best when his best was required. And that was on a 3rd and 4 with, you know, essentially the game on the line, giving it back to the Bills with a chance to go down and make a game of it. And on a 3rd and 4, he gets a zero look and has Calvin Ridley on a little slot go ball that ends up kind of fading out to the sideline. And you could not have placed it or thrown it any better. Like, that is why he was the generational talent. Throws like that. And there were a couple of them in this game. He had his mechanics on that. It was a quick three-step drop, bang, back foot hits, and that ball is out. And he gets smashed, too, with a free rusher. And he, you know, just calmly delivers the throw of the day, which I thought that was really cool. And I think Lawrence and the Jags together now kind of turn the page on this season, it feels like.
Yeah. And look, Calvin Ridley was a third down machine and they kept getting one-on-ones. And it's just like, you know, I feel like you want to be a quarterback and you think about, oh, I gotta be able to process information. I'm going to get 1 to 2 to 3. Like, you get to some key third downs. If you just run the ball enough where you're not having to face third and 12s, you know, and you can dial up some of that man coverage, not many corners going to be able to match up with Calvin Ridley. Right. No, there's no need to look anywhere else. Just let him go to work if you're going to get those one-on-ones. It feels like doing the Charger games. I see it with Keenan Allen. Like, there's certain downs where it's like, progression. Well, let's put that aside, this play. This is Keenan Allen. He's going to win, and I'm going to get him the ball. And Calvin Ridley was that way. On the other side, I will give the Bills some hope here. Man, that's tough. They get over there for what, you know, 50 hours?
2 days?
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know if that's the formula, man.
I didn't like that. So yeah. It's odd. You know, it's an odd situation. You're going to London to play that game. It did not go well for them, but 5 sacks, you know, Von Miller sprinkling him back in. Epinesa starting to take off. They'll get Rousseau back. I still think this defense built front to back is got a chance to, they're going to keep them in just about every ball game. So yeah, they're going to be fine. I'm not going to overreact to that loss on their side of things. All right. Speaking of big wins, the Eagles come out west. And they take on the Rams in a game that was really close early on. I think Cooper Kupp had 14 catches on the opening drive, something like that. I mean, it was like every ball was going his way.
Work him back in, you know?
Yeah, he's back real in. Easy. Yeah. Option route. Hey, let's try option route. Yeah, he had 7 for a buck 18. Puka Nacua had 7, 71, and a touchdown. But this game was about two things. Number one, the Eagles' pass rush heated up in the second half and kind of swallowed up this passing game. Stafford, they couldn't do anything in the second half after coming out, moving the ball really well. And then on the other side of the ball, Jalen Hurts was locked in, man. And it's similar to Purdy in that I almost call him Purdy plus, because they do bake in some easy ones. That, you know, they have a great design. They have a ton of weapons. They have a great offensive line, so they can get the looks that they want. And they bake in, you know, 10 to 12 of those easy layup throws. But then he makes 3 or 4 where now you're seeing this version of Jalen Hurts who's manipulating safeties and just kind of playing that graduate level football. And then every time they get a first down, it's 1st and 9. I mean, it is. It's a huge advantage.
When it's third and one,
it's over. So you only got to get 9 yards to get a first down. And it's impressive. And they ran him a bunch in this ball game. A lot of design quarterback runs. It's such an advantage because we talk about the young quarterbacks, right? Use your legs to buy time before you can develop into a passer. But normally we see it, and you've seen it kind of with Lamar. You kind of graduate from all the running and you want to do less and less of it. The Eagles have managed to develop him as a passer, but then not have to sacrifice what he does in the run game. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And this is a game where Dallas Goedert reminded everyone that he's still on this team too, right? With 8 catches, 117 yards. I mean, he had like 4 for 40 in the touchdown on the opening drive. And you're like, holy smokes. He is still there, right? With AJ and with Devontae Smith and Quez and then all the running backs out of the backfield too. So, I mean, you're talking about, you know, really, really good players at just about every spot. I mean, Hassan Reddick took the game over at the end and shut the door, right? Back-to-back sacks on Stafford as they were, you know, kind of still in the throes of their comeback bid. But I think the encouraging thing for the Rams is that, again, you got productive run game out of Kyren Williams. And then with Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua working together, it did not affect Puka's production. And in fact, probably helped him a little bit too. And so you got, you know, those two guys combined for 15 catches, 200 yards receiving and a touchdown. Like, that's winning football, you know, for the most part on offense. And they just, you know, a little bit more, I think it was more of a limited possession game. They did have some, Stafford was right over 50% completion. So they definitely had some, they probably want back there. But like, you're talking about the best team in the NFC, you know, one of the top two teams in the
NFC.
That's
a collision course, man. I think it's week 13. We get Niners Eagles. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Week 13 and then probably NFC championship game.
Jalen Carter is just a freak too, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, those 2 sacks were ridiculous. Just his lateral quickness. Like, it's totally different than everybody else. Like, you just watch all the other defensive linemen and you see how hard he can get left and how quickly he can get back right. Club, and he is up the field. He got 2 sacks, so he's well on his
way. Fletcher Cox is out, and you know
they don't care. They have so much depth.
That's what I'm saying. It's so much depth. Incredible.
They're in a good spot there in Philly. All right, let's get to this next one here. Which, man, this is I guess this shouldn't be a surprise, but a comfortable win for the Dolphins over the Giants.
Oh boy. Yeah. It is frustrating now for the Giants. And let's just hope that with Daniel Jones and that neck injury that he suffered late is not something that kind of rekindled those concerns of the neck injury from what was it a year or two ago? You know, that forced some of the offseason issues. So hope for that for the Giants and that he can be healthy enough that they can still try to figure this thing out and become a player at some point in the NFC East. But they got to get healthy on the offensive line. It's real trouble up there.
Oh, they're obviously bad, man.
It's bad. Look, they're missing three starters. You know, there's not a whole lot of teams in the league that can account for that kind of depth.
Most teams don't have five good ones.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So they're talking about trying to have eight starter level players there, and they don't. But this was explosive runs. Six explosive runs to one for the Dolphins. I mean, I don't know if there's a team that gets a hat on a hat better than Miami does. And here's the thing, like, they don't need to engage for that long when you have the speed that they have back there. Yeah. I mean, obviously they do creative stuff, right? I mean, like one of the first explosives was, you know, you get Jaylen Waddle comes in motion. He's lined up to the right. I mean, it's almost like they're faking the give to the left to Waddle. They've got the wing back as like a fullback. He goes off to the left to pretend like he's blocking that way. And then, I mean, they're pulling linemen out to the right. It's Achan coming around from the perimeter. I mean, like, they will dial it up, you know, with all the creativity, but their best play is just a simple zone run. Yeah. Hat on a hat, and Achan is out the gate like that. You know, I mean, they average 10 yards a play for the entirety of the game. I think you do have to give some credit to Kendall Lamb. He's done a really nice job at left tackle while Teron Armstead's been out.
Where do you go to school?
He's an App State guy. Yes, he is. Austin Jackson, right tackle. Robert Hunt was a beast. And you know what it kind of reminds me of? Connor Williams back at center, I think, made a big difference, by the way. But you know what it reminds me of? You've been on one of those streets, like kind of a busy street, maybe a downtown setting, where there's just light after light after light after light. And then you hit that thing just right, and bam, like all the greens hit at once, and you're just cruising. That's what Achan's got to feel like sometimes, like when he gets the ball. Because, I mean, like, it's like it just parts and choom, he's gone. You know what I mean?
See, that's the analogy you were thinking of. I was thinking of growing up when you'd have open gym and you're hoping you have 5-on-5, right? So you're going to pick teams and you're like, oh man, we only got 8 guys. And then you end up playing 5-on-3 because that's what the offensive line gets to do because everybody is so paranoid about the big plays in the passing game. You're going to see light boxes. So it's like, man, they blocked it up beautifully. Yeah, we got 5 to block their 4. You know, it's just the math is always going to be in their favor in the run game. And the whole thing is, we always talk about if you can run the ball, man, you got to pay that off with chunk plays in the passing game. This is the exact opposite. They're so dynamic in the passing game that now they're getting these huge chunk plays in the run game. Yeah. So, and that's, you know, it's a nice adjustment and it's a nice scouting adjustment too. I give them a lot of credit in the personnel department knowing, okay, we're going to get these favorable looks because of Waddle and Tyreek. Let's punish people for playing that look. And so let's get the freaking fastest running back we can find. Yeah. And they got him. And Achan's been awesome. So
I mean, look at this just real quick. Right. I mean, this is one drive. Achan for 8. Achan for 14. Mostert for 11. Mostert for 23. Achan for 6. Achan for 5. Mostert for 6. Touchdown. Yeah. Like,
That's stupid.
Incredible.
But I mean, again, make it look easy, and it is. So yeah. Hats off to them. And then, by the way, I just do not understand, like the Tyreek Hill deep ball on the go route. That I don't understand. You've got a safety who you're using to walk down and bracket the, I believe it was the tight end or the slot, whoever was down there. And I'm sitting here going like,
get some credit to
this. This is like, you know, when you have little kids, right? As you do, like, hey, you got to go to the bathroom. Hey, you got to bring a buddy. Okay. You don't go to the bathroom by yourself. Take a friend with you. Okay. If Tyreek Hill's out there in your corner,
bring a friend
with you. Bring a friend over. Don't go out there by yourself. And sure as heck, don't walk up on him if you have nobody over the top. Like,
right.
I am an advocate of try if you can get your hands on him, but you've got help over the top. If you can't do that, if I got to go on a solo mission, I am off. And I'm still getting out of there. If he gets a hitch, I pray to God we can all get to him. What I'm not going to do is sit there by myself and go toe-to-toe with him. And oh, by the way, not even get a finger on him at the line of scrimmage. It's over. I didn't understand that one at all. So that was again, though, the Giants playing shorthanded, it's a rough year, rough start for them.
By the way, 22 miles an hour for Tyreek Hill, fastest ball carrier this season. By the way, on a play where he got caught, he actually got caught on that play. It's kind of weird. I was like, oh man, I think A-chain might have got it.
Might have been going laterally, even though he made that.
Yeah,
you know, he had to cover so much distance.
He did.
Anyways, all right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the entertaining game here between the Chiefs and the Vikings. We'll do that right after this. You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you. All right, Rhett, the Chiefs do kind of what they've been doing all year long. They don't look perfect. It's 27-20. They beat the Vikings. Justin Jefferson ends up getting hurt. The Vikings could have really used him late in this ball game. They had a chance to go down and try and tie this thing up. I'll let you do it if you want to, in terms of the controversy about whether that should have been a penalty and then taking the helmet off and all the other drama that went along with that. Yeah. There's so many other parts of this game that were intriguing. Kelce gets hurt, thankfully came back in. But I watched the tape of these guys all back to back to back. So I watched, I want to watch Purdy. I watched Jalen Hurts. Who else? There was like three or four quarterbacks that I watched all back to back to back. And then Mahomes was in this mix. And I'm sitting here going like, man, I just love the play design and how this thing's set up. And it's just so creative. All these other guys. And then I put on Mahomes. And yeah, he hit some. There's some back foot, nice quick read stick throws. But the magic with him is so different than all these other guys of just, coloring outside the lines. Like, it's the gap between him and everybody else on broken plays is enormous. Like, we can talk about in the framework of the pocket, and you can start having the Tua and how Herbert's played at times, and obviously Josh Allen, he can do, and Jalen Hurts and Brock Purdy's playing out of his mind. There is no comparison when the initial play breaks down. His ability to see is incredible. Like, I've never seen somebody that's able to access the far reaches of the field while going in the opposite direction. And just to be able to see it, like, when you're watching tape all the time, you'll freeze it and you'll be like, oh my gosh, can you imagine if he could have got all the way back over here? The running back had leaked out, but nobody can see that. But somehow this guy does. Like, it's crazy.
I mean... And then the trust he has in his guys to make those plays and to stay alive. Oh, the
Justin Watson throw?
Yeah.
I mean, good Lord.
And then, I mean, like, for the Vikings, obviously they didn't run the ball worth anything in this game. Cousins throws it 47 times. Obviously, you got to do whatever you got to do to win a game. But that seems, a little bit, the formula seems a little bit off there in Minnesota. But Jordan Addison played a nice game and they needed him, with Jefferson going out. It felt like, this might have been the opportunity for Minnesota with Kelce a little bit less than, but he comes out and has one of the grittiest performances you'll see. He catches the touchdown late, 10 catches on the 11 targets. And, it's a tough dude right there. And it's a tough team that's got, when you have a team that can be as, finesse as they want, but then have a little bit of that grit and toughness too. Obviously, mm-hmm. Pacheco brings that in a run game. There's just a lot of different ways that the Chiefs can find ways to win.
I'm going back through the Vikings last year, right? This is a team that was 13-4. So you go back through, I'll just give you some of their wins. 28-24, 28-25, 27-17, 33-30 in overtime, 27-22, 39-36 in overtime, 27-24. Like, they literally won every close game. And as you would imagine, this year they've lost 20-17, 34-28, 28-24, 27-20. Almost all these games end with them with the ball in their hands with a chance to go down and try and win the ball game or at least continue the ball game. And all those plays they were able to get last year, it hasn't happened this year, which gives me incredible hope as a Padre fan that everything's just going to turn around for us next year.
Right. Got everything going for you.
Law of average is undefeated,
man. Wins. Yeah. Yeah, and then it was obviously the flip side for the Vikings this year.
Yeah, it has not gone their way.
They're in trouble here at 1-4. I mean, like, you're losing ground quickly.
As we're recording this, I don't know what the severity is on the Jefferson injury, and that is the most individually wide out driven team. I love Addison. Yeah. He's playing great, but that offense runs through Jefferson, and then that makes everything work. So if he's out, they're in big trouble. So hopefully it's not too bad.
Hamstring on a player, you know, that that feels like it, that's not something you can just tough through, you know. If you're Justin Jefferson, that's going to be a tough one, I think, for those guys.
All right, Steelers Ravens in the ugliest game of the week, 17-10.
This was crazy, man, because this looked like the Ravens were on their way to blowing the Steelers out. Yeah. Justice Hill scores early, and then it just turns into this like comedy of errors for Baltimore.
I think they just dropped another pass, by the way.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I think PFF had him with seven.
Seven. Yeah. Seven drop passes.
Look, it started in the red zone, right? Second quarter, they have a first and goal from the four and a nothing play to Zay Flowers. Then Mark Andrews drops a touchdown. Now, look, it wasn't the easiest of catches, but it's one a Pro Bowl tight end like that makes, you know, I'd say 9.5 times out of 10. Yeah. And then Bateman drops an even cleaner one on the very next play from Lamar, and they have to settle for a field goal. Should have been 14-0. Next possession, Justice Hill fumbles. Turns into a Steelers field goal. Next possession, 19 seconds to go, 4th-and-2. They decide not to take the points, and they don't convert, and so they get no points. They punt all the way through the third quarter. Then in the fourth quarter, their first possession gets blocked. A punt gets blocked by Miles Killebrew, ends up in a safety. Steelers get a field goal out of the free kick, so that's essentially a five-point play right there. Then they get the good fortune to force a fumble, which was really forced by Connor Hayward running into the punt returner, Gunnar Olszewski. And they get the ball down to the 5-yard line, and Lamar just forces a red. Yeah. What was that to OBJ? Like,
I don't know. Joey Porter Jr. just swallowed
good
him
coverage.
Up.
Yeah. Yeah. But I just look away from that. Right. And then, you know, they give up a zero look, go ball, pick it to Pickens, strip sack from Highsmith. And then it's essentially over. And you're like, I mean, they absolutely shot themselves in the foot all, you know, for the entire second, you know, third and fourth quarters. And the Steelers are like, all right, if you're going to give it to us, we'll take it. And that's how we got here.
This Steelers team kind of reminds me of some of the Patriot teams in the past.
Yeah.
Where they kind of just sit and wait for you to screw up. It's like, they're not doing everything right. They're just waiting for you to do something wrong. And then when you do something wrong, there's going to be just enough. They're going to capitalize on it and win a ball game. And the other thing is, man, if you're the Ravens, I mean, the only thing you got to worry about is Pickens over the top. Like, if you make the Steelers have to, you know, gradually move the ball down the field, they haven't proven they can do that. And you leave Marlon Humphrey's first game back out there one-on-one with no help. And that was it. That was a wrap. That was a wrap. But again, it's kind of discombobulated and as ugly as the Steelers offense can look for large stretches, man, their defense, they are point producing defenses that they are not in the, they are not in a protection mode. They are in the attack mode,
you know,
but then they just take them away from them.
Yeah. And they did. And they did. That's exactly what happened. You're right.
So, and again, that for those that haven't maybe been to one of those games in person, like, there is still some rivalry left in the NFL, and that's as good as it gets. I mean, there's
a lot of them there in the AFC North.
Always a physical affair between those teams. All right, from a close game to one that was not. The Saints and the Patriots, 34-0. I think you referenced it at the top, Rhett. So I'll give you a quick recap of what I said last night when I
was asked, dead on accurate.
I was asked, would it be different if they switched quarterbacks? And I said, no. And I said, this is not a pro Mac Jones, all in on Mac Jones statement. This is an indictment on what is around him. This offensive line has been bad, and it was equal opportunity. When you watch the tape, you'll see him all the way across the board getting beat and getting beat early. You freeze it when you get to the top of the drop. There's nowhere to go with the football. There's nobody open. The two picks, one of them, he gets drilled. And that's a pick. The other pick, the receiver basically threw it to the DB.
Yeah.
So I'm just looking at this going, he is, you know, we've talked about it for years, trucks and trailers. I'm not saying Mac Jones is a truck. He's not a truck. There's only a handful of trucks in this league that are good enough to elevate the talent around him, and they can pull their team to victory. The rest of them are trailers. They're dependent on what you have. And if you have the pieces in place, they can operate. They can get the vehicle where it needs to go. They don't have it. They don't have the pieces in place to be able to support a quarterback like Mac Jones. And they don't have a quarterback on their roster that's a top five quarterback in this league that's capable of doing it. So I don't know what the answer is. I just know, you know, how does it get better? What gets better with better players? And yeah, that's not going to happen until you get to the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing they can do at this point. You know, it's try to, you know, if this Patriots team makes the playoffs, Bill Belichick will win Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
But right now, you know, the Executive of the Year title is kind of tough to deal with on that side of things. When you
look, I mean, they had, I think he had 110 yards. Let me pull it up here. Mac had 110 yards. Rhett, 30 to 40 of them were in the 2-minute drill at the end of the half where they're just giving him. I mean, they were like giving to him. Like literally, it was 60 to 70 yards of passing offense in this game.
Yeah.
Nothing.
By the way, on the flip side for the Saints, I mean, it wasn't like a hugely prolific day offensively. I mean, Derek Carr threw for 183. They were in good field position. And a lot of times they ran the heck out of the ball. Kendre Miller got 12 carries.
How about that?
So perhaps welcoming another rookie to the party in our draft, Tuesday drafts. So kind of curious to see if that continues. But Alvin Kamara ran the ball 22 times. I don't know how many games in his career he's run the ball 22 times.
Yeah. But again, they have a formula. I mean, you play defense, you play defense like that, just protect the ball, run it, be efficient. Michael Thomas made a couple nice plays. That division is, it's kind of interesting now. When you look at Tampa, the way they've played, now
Atlanta's back.
Atlanta, you know, showing some signs of life here. Big one for them. You know, I guess that'll take us right into it. We can jump into the next game here, which is the Falcons Texans game, which was back and forth. And then Ritter, I have to say, Rhett, up to you to go here. But I would say by far the most impressed I've been with Desmond Ritter in his young career.
I would agree. And this is the headline I kind of wrote on my notes was comeback QBs. You know, and it wasn't just Ritter. I mean, it's Stroud too.
Stroud made plays too.
Yeah. And I think what we'll look at in this game, what the Texans will say, and I'll get to Ritter here in a sec, but what Texans will look at is three field goals, right? In Falcons territory. And then the fourth was, you know, time running out at the end of the first half, they end up kicking one. But, you know, you look back at those three third downs, a third and one, left side just gets beat. So they had Tunsil and Howard both playing the left side, both back in the lineup for the first time this season together. And it felt like it might have taken a second for them to get their bearings back. And that was just, they got beat. And so they get stopped on short yards. They had a third and 15. Obviously, they get backed up there and they had to kick it. And then a third and four, Stroud's a little off on a tight window throw to Schultz. So, but then you go back to the next third down that they had, an important one at the end of the game. We absolutely had to have it, you know, for the comeback, right? You're down and you need the touchdown, third and nine. I thought this was a great play by Bobby Slowick because you have a zone coverage look from Atlanta and they are playing. Those safeties are sitting right there at the sticks at right at about 10 to 11 yards and they are not moving. There's no backpedal. So Schultz runs a little like dig and go, gets Jesse Bates to bite up and it's a beautiful route, beautiful move. And then CJ Stroud's getting pressured. He's getting the right tackles, gets right in his lap, backfoots this thing, just perfectly floats it into Schultz for the touchdown. And you're like, all right, maybe the first comeback win for CJ Stroud, you know, on the road here. And then you get Ritter. Career high, 329 yards. I don't know if you had a chance to watch that last drive, but that Texans defense was gassed. I mean, that play,
they just had no pass rush.
They had nothing. And then, you know, that throw to Drake London, like everyone's went moving up and in slow it. Motion. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody is. It's a two man route versus a four man zone from the hash to the sideline. And Ritter just fits it right into London. His fourth game winning drive in nine starts.
He hasn't lost a home game in college or the NFL.
Correct.
That's insane. Good for him. Yeah. I mean, look, there's been some ugly along with that. But that was to me, this was his best and he needed it. He was able to put it all together too. Yeah. Very nice. A couple other things we'll hit on here. That's the games we did the deep dive on. A couple takeaways. Bengals, big win for them. I said it going into this game. This is a huge two-game stretch. This one, they've got Seattle. I know Seattle's coming off of a bye, but that's another winnable game. They could get to their bye, which is after this next week, at 500. So, Joe Burrow, you survived the injury. You get to 3-3. You're right in the thick of it in the division. Yeah. You're still where you need to be in the conference. Nobody has really run away from you. So that's a, it sets up for a huge game with them against the Seahawks next week. Burrow looked like he's starting to round into form. And it's like, man, if you can just get to this win and then in, get him a little rest, then I think you get, you know, you can get on a run here, even though, man, I think coming out, that's Niners Bills. And it's brutal.
That's going
to be fun. But at least they are going to be rested up for that and have a healthy Joe Burrow, hopefully, as we see him take some strides. I'll give you one other one, and then I'll see if you want to hit on any of these other games. But Jets Broncos, the Hackett Bowl, as it was deemed. Breece Hall being unleashed was fun.
Yeah.
Just showing what he can do. Man, they just, I pray they can keep him healthy. If they keep him healthy,
they
have a chance, because this offense can literally run through him. You know, one of the few running backs you can really have everything go through him. And Zach, I'll give Zach credit. I think it's 2 weeks in a row now. He's over 70%. This was the most calm I've seen him. Normally when you watch him, it's all kind of stressful just watching him in the pocket. He's so jittery. And he's so wound tight in this game, especially even the big conversion he had at the end of the game to Conklin. There was a couple inbreakers in this game where I saw him just kind of sink your feet into the ground, look more calm. And, you know, one of the difficulties of evaluating him in college was that BYU offensive line was really good. The schedule they played that last year was terrible. So he had time to really get comfortable. He went from the most comfortable pocket to maybe the most chaotic pocket in the transition from the college to the NFL. And it was jarring.
Yeah.
He didn't handle it well, obviously. But I thought they held up pretty well, even, you know, they had some injuries. We'll see what happens with Vera Tucker. Tippmann went out of this game. Becton was in and out. But I thought for the most part, they gave him some clean pockets. The Broncos tend to do that. But he looked quiet. It was the first time I've seen him play kind of quiet, which was nice to see.
Yeah. And I was looking, Nick Benito, how about another 2 sacks though, for the Broncos, turning into something on the edge there.
That's the get off stuff that we've talked about with him.
Yep.
Forever.
Yep. So, okay. I got something on Carolina, Detroit, just quickly. You know, I thought it was kind of an afterthought. You know, when the Lions signed David Montgomery, that dude can play.
He's been great.
He's been fantastic. And they got a great offensive line, obviously. Mm-hmm. They're really physical up there. Three really top of the line players, right? In Ragnow, Decker, and Penei Sewell. And they rock and roll there for sure. So 19 carries, 109 yards there. And I'll just say this now. I think by the end of the season, Sam LaPorta is a top 5 tight end in the league. He is that good as a receiver. He's only going to get better. Jared Goff clearly trusts him, and he's pretty good in the run game too. You know, I don't know if he's George Kittle, but he's pretty dang good there. So I think that dude's got a huge ceiling.
So I'm going to do a little exercise here, and I'm going to see, don't say until I get to the list. Which team am I talking about? The Niners or the Lions? Okay. You ready? a very creative play caller, an efficient, accurate quarterback, an outstanding 2-way tight end from Iowa, a top 3 pick defensive lineman from the Big Ten who's elevating the entire defense, and a top 3 offensive line in the NFL. A physicality and edge to him combined with creativity. I mean, it's like they're like the junior partner of the 49ers.
Yeah. Wow. That's, you know,
there's a lot of similarities there.
And if they can continue to keep putting it together, man. You might be talking about the Lions making a play and trying to knock on that door with, you know, the NFC elites and the Eagles and the Niners here. I mean, it may not be that far off.
Yeah, they're building their team the right way. And I really am starting to feel like it's 2 different sports in the NFC and the AFC, where we spent so much time talking about the AFC quarterbacks and the high-flying offenses, and all of a sudden the NFC is just bully ball. Physical, like, you better bullies. Be freaking physical at the line of scrimmage. Dallas got that lesson last night. So anyways, that was just my 2 cents there on the Lions. Last one here real quick, Titans Colts, man, you hate to see it with Anthony Richardson going down again, shoulder injury, but they find a way still to get the win over the Titans 23-16.
Yeah. Gardner Minshew is so valuable. I mean, that was such a great signing from Chris Ballard to bring him over and to get him going. Cause I mean, like, they have relied on him, and he has proven to be huge. And how about in the Jonathan Taylor debut game, Zach Moss goes off. Right?
Of course he does.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's like T.O. on Jerry Rice Day.
That's hilarious.
That was big.
Callback. Yeah. All right, Rhett. I am out for the rest of the week here. So we've got my daughter's getting married. So I'm going to be on the wedding train here. But I will be back next Monday. And I know with you, Bucky, our buddy Lance is going to fill in as well. We've got everything covered here on Move the Sticks for the week. But anything else you want to throw in there before we get out of here?
No, I think that's it. I'm going to go see Michigan this week up close and personal. So
I want your feedback on that one.
I want to go see those. That offensive line last year, when I walked down there on the field, like you look mm-hmm. up at every mm-hmm. single one of them. And so they've got it rolling again now. They played two of their best games of the season. So I'm curious to see what they look like in person.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that scouting report. They have been hammering everybody. All right, thank you guys so much for hanging with us. I appreciate you guys subscribing, giving us a little rating and review. We do appreciate those as well. Again, the guys will be back tomorrow. We have you covered 5 days a week right here. So hang with us. We appreciate it on Move the Sticks. You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.